I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. 3 months after the unrest that hit Baltimore, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake concedes that the city was not prepared for the April 27th riot. Her response came yesterday after the Sun received and analyzed more than 7,000 emails and other documents regarding the protests and riot following the death of Freddie Gray from injuries while in police custody. The documents obtained by the Sun show that communications within city government broke down as officials desperate for information exchanged rumors and subordinates questioned city leaders. Baltimore Sun reporters Luke Broadwater and Ian Duncan join us this hour to provide a behind-the-scenes look of the city's response to April's chaos. That's Midday after the news. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. As part of a request through the Maryland Public Information Act, the Baltimore Sun received more than 7,000 documents, including emails between city officials about the protests in the city following the death of 25-year-old Freddie Gray from injuries sustained in police custody, and the riot that occurred the afternoon and evening after his funeral. That was April 27th. The documents depict a government in a state of confusion, unprepared for the fires, looting, and confrontations with police that happened that day. More than 60 buildings caught fire. More than 400 were damaged. 200 people were arrested back on April 27th. The documents received were not only correspondences between city officials, but emails from concerned citizens and business owners who opposed the curfew that was put in place by Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake after the riot. And even a representative of pop singer Rihanna was heard from, expressing interest in playing a free concert in Sandtown, Winchester, and marching with protesters. We'll hear all about this today from two of the reporters who dug into this massive amount of information and culled from it relevant and interesting emails and tried to construct a chronology for people to get a better understanding of what was going on among city officials, what was being said in the hours leading up to the unrest of April 27th and in the days after that. Luke Broadwater, reporter for The Sun, and Ian Duncan are with me in the studio to walk through this. Ian, nice to see you.
Hello.
And Luke, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
First, let's talk a little bit about this. 7,000, it sounds like a lot of documents to go over, turned over to the Baltimore Sun in response to a Maryland Public Information Act request. Now, I had one question about it. I was struck by the story on this that pointed out that assistant city solicitors had some say in what documents the Sun received. It's not as if the Sun received all documents. So can you talk about what you didn't receive from the city's point of view and why?
Yeah, so about 3 months ago, I asked for all communications coming in to certain top city officials. I think I had a list of about 14 or 15 people. And we went through some preliminary negotiations about what I could and couldn't get. They said other news outlets wanted to join and get these documents as well. We ended up paying some money for the amount of work that went into preparing these documents. Ultimately, what we got was more than 7,000. But I suspect that an equal or higher number were withheld. And we know that from the letter that the city solicitor's office wrote to us. They said they withheld lots of documents due to them being deliberative in nature, and they withheld things that had to do with sort of public, their public safety planning, their public security planning. Now, this is it's legal for them to withhold it. As best I can tell, there's a provision of the law that allows them to withhold this information, but I think a lot of people are questioning whether they should have, given given the great public interest and the great need for transparency in how city government handled this unrest.
These are the words that jumped out to me. Communications that are pre-decisional and reflect the give and take of the decision-making process are protected. That's in a letter to the Sun from two assistant city solicitors on that. So, I mean, that gives them, I would think, wide latitude about what they didn't offer to you. Pre-decisional and the give and take of the decision-making process, you could argue almost any communications between officials are are pre-decisional, right?
Right.
And reflect give and take.
And you can sort of see where we didn't get things. So, for instance, there's a time on that Monday when many people are calling for the National Guard to come in. Citizens are writing in. There's communications between city governments saying, what should we tell the public about whether we're calling in the National Guard? And you see an email from the mayor's chief of staff about 4 o'clock, 1 hour after the rioting started, saying, responding to some of that. Then you don't see anything else about that for the next 2.5 hours before you see that Governor Hogan has called in the guard at the request of the mayor. So we don't, I assume there were some emails sent during that time. We just didn't get them. Okay. So that's an example of what we didn't get.
Let's walk through the chronology here a bit. Okay. Ian and Luke, let's talk about what was revealed from these emails about, say, Friday into Saturday, April 24th into 25th. And it could be anything that you think is worthy of note for our listeners here. Saturday was a day of march and protests that ended up with disturbances downtown near Camden Yards and at Harbor Place.
So you've had a week of protests in the week after Freddie Gray died on April the 19th. There's protests pretty much every day of that week. And then Saturday, much bigger protests. There's a thread in there from, it's Bob Maloney who starts it off. He's the mayor's head of emergency response. And it's just a subject line and it just says, I want updates every 30 minutes on what's going on. And then it's a thread kind of going back and forwards between him and his aides who are either on the ground or at a watch center, it's not clear, saying what's going on. And one person who's very clearly on their mind through all of this is Malik Shabazz, this president of Black Lawyers for Justice, a DC-based organization, but he used to be the head of the new Black Panther Party as well. And they're tracking what he's doing. There's this exchange where he's got a megaphone, Freddie Gray's half-brother has got a megaphone, but he's not as loud. And so the city is trying to get Freddie Gray's family a louder megaphone so they can kind of have a bigger voice, and they call him a nice sort of peaceful influence.
This is when they're downtown on Saturday?
Yeah, it's not. I'm not sure if they're downtown by this point or they're heading from sort of the Gilmore Homes area towards
yeah.
the city.
I was in that march. I remember Malik Shabazz with the microphone. So they had their eyes on him. When we saw references or heard references to outside agitators from the police commissioner and others, I think that was a reference to Malik Shabazz and maybe others from outside the city.
Yeah, almost certainly. And the emails show that. I think there's one that refers to him as a violent agitator. So they were very closely monitoring him. And I think when they talked with these euphemistic terms, he was the focus of a lot of their attention.
Yeah, I mean, we've looked at like who was actually arrested in connection with all of this stuff. And there's very few people who are really from outside the city. Like, there's not a sense that there were hundreds of people who were coming down from New York or from D.C. or something like that to be involved. It seems to be he was the focus.
On Saturday, Luke, we've gone over this. The mayor was speaking to reporters Saturday night after the disturbances downtown, and she uttered the phrase, a room to destroy, which has been used against her by critics, suggesting that the mayor ordered the police to give demonstrators downtown who became violent or caused damage room to do that. We've gone over this a couple of times, but we ought to go over it again. And I'm asking you about it because I wonder if the emails reveal anything about that statement.
Sure.
Is there any email indicating that the mayor gave such an order?
There is an interesting email from Commissioner Batts where he's corresponding with a citizen who's a supporter of police. And Batts says to this man, because the protest on Saturday was against the police, it was very important that we didn't look like aggressors or instigators. And so we had to give them space for the protest. In the future, we're going to tighten things up. I think the strategy of city government at that time, remember, you had about 2 weeks of peaceful protests up until that day. So they were very focused on trying to respect people's First Amendment rights, allow people to protest without militarizing the police. And I think the point the mayor was trying to make, and she did so in her admission inarticulately, was to say that some people took advantage of that space and committed property damage that evening.
Right, and she issued a statement trying to correct.
Right,
she misspoke on Saturday night and tried to correct that. Yet people used that against, and they continue to. And the police union used that quote on its after-action review of the riot. But okay, so there's nothing else in there. We don't see an email that says give them room to destroy.
No, certainly
just
not.
Just wanted to go over that one.
There is an email from the mayor's one of the mayor's communications people going back and forth with one of the national reporters about what she meant by that and trying to clarify that narrative. But it's I think you know. That horse has left the barn.
Let's talk about Sunday then. We get into Sunday. The mayor calls for a conference call with business leaders in the city. What can you tell us about that day? And then we'll get to Monday. Sunday. Anything on Sunday?
Yeah. So Sunday is a day where it seemed that there was after the some of the violence and property damage on Saturday. Sunday was completely peaceful, and so the mayor had scheduled a whole bunch of meetings. With business leaders, with school, school officials, with religious leaders, and was sort of trying to start the process of healing the city again. And I don't know if they really believed how bad things would get on Monday. And I think her comments yesterday sort of hinted at that.
There's one message in there where there's some back and forth. The police are looking to go to the state to get some fresh riot gear. And they say, well, what are you looking for? And they say, well, we need like 20 shields. And so, you know, they were clearly just trying to maybe fix things, that replace things that maybe got damaged on Saturday or whatever it is. But it's a small scale thing. It's not like they're preparing for some huge crisis.
Okay, so there's no discussion among the mayor's chief of staff, anybody like that, about bringing in the National Guard on Sunday?
Not at all.
No.
And there's, and you can see from the, there's these things called the crisis reports that the Office of Emergency Management starts putting out, and they don't start putting them out till Tuesday. So they did not view that Saturday as something that was an immediate crisis that could escalate worse, it appears. They didn't start putting things out on Sunday and Monday. So
but we okay. do know at the same time that the week before, on the Friday, they were calling together different police departments. The National Guard leadership was talking to the state and to the city. So you get this uneven picture of them definitely kind of preparing and gearing up and planning for into the weekend. But then, you know, once you get into Monday, the different picture starts to emerge.
Actually, Sunday night, Drew Vetter, the police department's government affairs director, sends an email to elected officials at 10:13 p.m. This is Sunday, warning that some students intend to, quote, walk out after first period and or around 3 p.m. tomorrow and head downtown. BPD, Baltimore Police Department, will closely be monitoring the situation, and officers will be deployed accordingly.
Right. So at that point, the police intelligence on Sunday night believed this was a walkout. They don't use the word riot. They don't use the word violence or anything like that.
The word purge isn't
right.
Isn't
you don't
in there.
See that. You don't start seeing warnings of the purge till when the next morning. Ian,
yeah,
is that right?
School teachers and school police officials start to like raise that idea fairly early on Monday morning.
Okay.
And then we see an email, a pretty like prophetic email about an hour before the rioting happens, where someone in the health department says we're hearing rumors that children are going to start rioting. They use the word riot at Mondawmin and then down North Avenue. So they even predict the places where the worst of the rioting would happen.
This is interesting. Now, this is not coming from a police intelligence official or
no.
anyone like that. This is coming from a health department, the deputy health commissioner, Olivia Farrow,
right.
Saying that the health department had received reports that children will possibly riot after school starting at 3 p.m. down from Mondawmin to North Avenue and to downtown. Staff at Druid becoming concerned. I guess the health department's office at Druid Hill Park or Druid Avenue.
Right across from Mondawmin, yeah.
May need to close early, waiting to see if rumor or if something seems to begin happening. So that email goes to who? It's marked urgent.
That's sent to the
city's labor commissioner.
Well, Leanna Wen gets that email. She then, and this isn't all in the story because it was too complex to explain
right,
this.
Right.
she then checks with BPD. They say they're monitoring it. They've heard the same thing. This is when the rumors of the purge are circulating, the flyer. And then they reach out to the labor commissioner to see if they can start closing offices early.
Oh, okay. Why do you have to reach out to the labor commissioner? I mean, is the labor commissioner's
I'm
decision
not sure,
about
yeah. I don't,
sending city employees home early?
That seems to be some sort of city protocol that I'm unfamiliar with. Maybe they're maybe you, in order to get paid, you have to have some order from the labor commissioner? I don't actually know the answer to that.
That's Luke Broadwater, reporter for The Sun, also with us in the studio. Ian Duncan, reporter for The Sun. We're talking about the, what's revealed in some 7,000 emails and other documents that The Sun received as a result of a Maryland Public Information Act request to the city government about the events of April 24th, 25th through May 1st and 2nd and the end of the curfew. We'll have to talk about that. And I think you're going to be impressed at the time frame here. You know, I sometimes people think this went on for hours and hours and hours, and the decision that the mayor was, slow in making a decision about the National Guard, when really the time frame here is something like 3 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. when that call is finally made. So that's 3.5 hours. We'll have to talk about what went into that decision and, what that whole process was like as revealed by these emails. So we'll do that after this break. Folks, if you've been reading any of The Sun stories, and there have been many of them about these emails, you have questions about it, please give us a ring during this hour while Ian Duncan and Luke Broadwater are here. 410-662-8780. Tweet a question to Midday, WYPR. Send us an email if you like, midday@wypr.org. Have an interesting email to read here from a citizen named Lou. We'll do that when we get back. That, of course, is Rihanna, the R&B megastar. She wanted to come to Baltimore in the week after rioting broke out to walk with the protesters and do a free concert here. This came out of the emails disclosed on Monday to the Baltimore Sun as a result of their Freedom of Information Act request. Ian Duncan, you came across that story pretty quickly and got that up on the Sun website by... says here by 9:10 p.m. Monday night. Anyway, that one must have jumped out at you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a good example of, like, there's things in there that when you get this sort of thing back, you know you're looking for. We're looking for what was the mayor doing, what were her top staff doing.
Right.
But then you just get these kind of little gems that you could never have predicted. So what this was, it was an email from a sergeant, I think, in the Baltimore Police Department, writing to the people in the media relations staff saying, hey, I talked to this representative. He says that she wants to come and do this concert. And then you see this being forwarded to then Commissioner Batts and to people in the mayor's office. And then it starts showing up on these official intelligence reports saying she might be playing this concert. She doesn't have a permit to do this. The police are probably going to shut it down if she does try to.
Oh, right. Shut down Rihanna in Baltimore because you don't have a permit?
Yeah. But judging by the reaction to this story, that might not have gone down very well.
This happened at the day after the riot?
I think.
Oh,
this
no,
was
actually, it's a week after.
In
this
the
is,
week, yeah.
Came in May 1st. Another thing that I was impressed by in all these emails was emails from citizens. While things were still happening on April 27th.
There's a lot of that. And, people writing to the mayor and to the commissioner. We don't have so much about what the mayor was kind of thinking about these, but there's somewhere the commissioner says, like, thanks for this, I agree. Or he sends it over to the communication staff and says, you know, this is a positive email. Can you share this? We need the morale boost from people.
So you see Commissioner Batts, former Commissioner Batts's responses to some of those.
Right, right.
Luke, several of these emails from citizens in the time frame here, 3:30, 4 p.m., 5 p.m. saying, 5:30 p.m. saying, send in the National Guard. The city's out of control.
Right. Yeah, that's one thread we picked up on. A lot of people sending direct emails to the mayor remember, the National Guard's called in at 6:30. The riot starts at 3 and gets worse. We picked up a number of emails, citizens writing in saying, please call in the guard, please call in the guard. And, a lot of people think the mayor waited too long. A lot of that's because of what Governor Hogan said that evening, where he said when she finally called, I signed the order in 5 minutes.
He said he couldn't get her on the phone.
Right, right. He couldn't.
She
couldn't
finally
get her on the
phone
for 2 hours.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So would, you know, and it's certainly worth exploring. But they did take 3 hours or so to call in the guard. The guard's a very expensive thing to do. Could city police handle this? Was it too bad? When was it too bad? Those are all judgment calls that it was tasked only to the mayor has the authority to make that call. So it's up to her.
The mayor's chief of staff, Calliope Parthamos, right?
Right.
You report she resisted calls for the guard, writing, I think, in response to someone who wanted to know how to respond to citizens. State troopers have been assisting. National Guard is only when there is a state of emergency.
Right. So one of the community liaisons writes to Parthamos and says, all these people are asking me to call in the guard. Why aren't we calling the guard? And so that was her response. We have to declare a state of emergency for that. Tell them that is what she's saying. So the city at that point at 4 o'clock was not yet ready to declare a state of emergency. Clearly 2.5 hours later, they were.
Now, one thing I want to go back to, we mentioned this at the outset of the show, communications that are pre-decisional and reflect the give and take of the decision-making process are protected according to the city solicitor's office, and thus the Sun did not receive any emails or documents so characterized, right?
Right.
So pre-decisional give and take of the decision about calling Larry Hogan to say, Governor, please send in the National Guard is a significant one here. And so is there a gap in, would you say there's a gap in the emails, the communications that the Sun received?
Really have orders. Which you could argue that that's not pre-decisional, right? Like once the decision is made, here's
an
order.
Right, yeah.
But we don't know. I mean, I think a lot of this was done over the phone. They have these command centers, the one in Reisterstown, the one in the city, where people are talking face-to-face, where maybe they're not generating these kinds of records, which, you know, that can be frustrating because it would just be nice to have these timestamps and to know at least when was the actual decision made,
right.
When did the order go out?
That's right. I mean, we should point out that people talk on phones during this time, probably
sure.
A lot more than they use email, actually,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. We did ask for all communications. The city has been reluctant in the past to give us ping messages and texts, but they have been more agreeable to emails. I'm not sure exactly why, what the legal difference is. So I'm sure, and face-to-face communication, obviously there's no record of that. So we have some of the picture, but not the whole picture.
Some people said, and we'll go to the phone lines in just a moment, folks, to take some calls and questions here, 410-662-8780. Some people complain that the mayor was not visible during this time.
Sure.
This time being from roughly 3 p.m. until when? When did we see the mayor?
8 p.m. Is the time she appears before the cameras.
Okay. What do the emails suggest about that, or what do you see in there? Are there people writing to the mayor saying, where are you? You need to be more visible?
We didn't see that from the emails in real time. What we did see is the next day, businessman David Cordish writes in saying the mayor needs to be more visible. She should be out there walking with business leaders in the streets.
What did Kevin Harris, the mayor's press spokesman, say to you about that, about the mayor's visibility?
Right. So although that's not in the emails, we asked, and he said basically it was her opinion that she didn't want to go in front of the cameras until she had come to some conclusions and made some decisions. They needed to work out the details about whether they should call in the guard, whether they should implement a curfew, how they could do it. Is it reasonable? Do we have the staff to enforce it? And she didn't want to go out half-cocked with a half-baked plan.
Right.
So that's their opinion. Other people think she should have gone out and said, we're working on things. We're getting this under control. Trust me. Mm-hmm. I have to get back to work. She never did that. Whether the voters will hold that against her, you know, we'll be seeing a year from now.
This statement that she made, that Baltimore wasn't fully prepared for the riot, that's at least the Sun's headline.
Right.
Is this the first time we've heard the mayor say that? That way, is it in reaction to the Sun's stories this week?
Right. So that was she has been defending her record largely on this. She says nobody was killed during the riots. We only had a few hours of unrest, not weeks of unrest. She compares it to the riots of the 60s, where police and National Guardsmen shot and killed people in some cities. And so she's been sort of painting.
We had numerous hundreds of fires in Baltimore.
Exactly.
Lasted a week.
Much
yeah.
worse.
Yeah.
So she's been trying to say they did a good job, generally. That said, in response to these emails, she does acknowledge there are emails that show they had riot gear on order. They didn't have the right riot gear in time and as much as they needed. And they didn't have the right training that they needed. They were trained in crowd control, but not riot control. And so They were prepared, but they weren't fully prepared, is I think how she would say it.
And we know from the National Guard speaking to them last week that they had, after they saw what happened in Ferguson, they were speeding up their planning for something like this in case it happened in Baltimore or anywhere else in the state. And they worked with the city police, and the general in the National Guard said that the police revamped some of their procedures or decided they would after doing this training exercise. Unfortunately, the police haven't said whether that was done and complete by the time that April rolled around, so we're not really sure whether they had a kind of concrete plan and a really up-to-date plan in place.
Ian Duncan from The Sun, Luke Broadwater from The Sun. We'll take some calls here, 410-662-8780. Let's go to Michael in Baltimore City. Welcome to the Midday Show. Go right ahead. Hi. Michael, you there? All right, let's switch quickly to Robert in Baltimore. Take his comment. Robert, go right ahead, please.
Hi, thank you. So I have one major frustration. I've heard this same many conversations where they go through the chronology and the litany of ways that there are examples where there was no leadership at the top. But I've never heard the number one thing that I think was the mayor's fault and problem. There were numerous protests, mostly peaceful, and most of them took the same form. Group of people, either college students, people from Gilmore, different areas, they would take a long walk, and that walk would usually end in front of City Hall. And they were all peaceful, and not one of those am I aware that the mayor walked out her front door. Mm-hmm. Not to make a speech, but maybe there were large groups, thousands sometimes, of Baltimore City residents frustrated, wanting to say enough is enough with something, and she never could find it in her to walk outside just to listen, to shake hands, to do what I think any real city mayor would do. So I think that alone is enough to say she's not qualified to be a mayor of a big city.
That's an interesting observation. I'm racking my brain here trying to remember those protests, and he's right about where they all ended up, and I'm trying to remember if the mayor did ever come out and talk to people.
Not to my knowledge. Did she ever go out in the middle of a protest and shake hands and talk to the protesters? I do think they met with sort of family members and clergy, and they might activist groups individually in City Hall, but I don't think that she ever appeared in the middle of a protest. Mm-hmm. I can't remember that ever happening.
I can't think of a...
Yeah,
I think
Robert's right about that.
There'd be a photograph sort of in your brain somewhere of that happening. Of course, we saw her after the riot, but I don't remember a scene like that pre-riot.
I think you're in a difficult spot maybe as a political leader here, but you've got the police are doing an investigation into the underlying death of Freddie Gray. The state's attorney's office is reviewing the law. The mayor has a sort of difficult role as sort of the top leader in the city. People are clearly frustrated, but you know, I think she's in a difficult spot of, do you want to get ahead of the investigation? Do you want to say something that then becomes an issue in the case down the road?
She's very careful about what she says. She probably would have been very careful about that, but maybe she was concerned that she would be heckled or something if she
I don't know. I've actually never asked her that question.
Bill in Gambrels, we'll take your question or comment. Welcome to Midday.
Well, thanks, Dan. And I'm glad that the other guy went before me, because I just think people are looking for reasons to complain about the mayor. I was in the riots. I was a soldier in the active army in 1967 and 68 in Detroit and Washington, D.C. Now, this was after the police in those places and the National Guard in those places had come out and started and made the riots worse. So they had to call in the active army. The mayor of Baltimore this year did not do that. She did not make that fatal mistake of sticking the police on those people, and she's absolutely right. What she was doing behind the scenes was making sure that those police officers didn't attack those citizens and kill them and create a worse problem. If you remember, on the day after, or Tuesday, I guess it was, people were dancing in the street, and the National Guard hadn't even been put in position yet. So I think everybody is looking to blame this mayor, and she did a magnificent job of keeping people from getting killed and keeping this city from being destroyed.
Thank you very much for those comments, Bill. I actually have an email here I'm going to read that's along these same lines. If you disagree or agree, please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. Let's take a minute to read, Ian and Luke. So I'm going to read it, and then we'll go into the break and come back and get some response. And I have some more questions for Luke Broadwater and Ian Duncan about all these emails and documents that The Sun received this week. This email is from Lou in Baltimore. He says, I think our city's response to the riots was pretty good. Anyone doing an after-action report on a firefight is going to find problems. There are always communication issues, lack of information, poor decisions. This was a pretty unusual event, and you can't expect a plan to be in place beforehand. It's going to be a response-type situation. The administration elected to allow some steam to be blown off instead of trying to put a cap on it. In the engineering world, we always vent steam to avoid a boiler explosion. It's the lesser of two evils. I think the mayor had very good situational awareness and deployed the assets well, maintained reserves, and measured the response to the threat. I'm getting a little impatient with the police union and their claim of safety issues. Of course, it would have been better to have more shields and equipment in place, but you can only pre-place so much. The men and women acted bravely and maintained discipline in the face of a pretty chaotic situation. I think the lack of aggressive firepower kept the response from escalating and kept their time exposure to a minimum. I find it troubling that it seems like the cops on the street are under the impression that they were abandoned by City Hall and they were put in peril. I'd argue that the response, warts and all, reduced their exposure as much as could be expected. Frankly, I'd vote for SRB, that's a reference to Stephanie Rawlings Blake, based upon her handling of the situation. I think we should be celebrating the fact that we've got people in charge who understand the community and act upon that knowledge in a challenging situation. If you have comments you'd like me to read on the air, midday@wypr.org. We'll be right back. 410-662-8780 if you have questions or comments for my guests, Luke Broadwater and Ian Duncan of The Sun. This is interesting. There's many interesting pieces to this, and The Sun now has published online close to 20 stories related to this data dump, we call it, 77,000 emails and other documents that they got from City Hall as a result of a Maryland Public Information Act request. Didn't get all of it because the city held back, and I guess they can under the law because the words pre-decisional and deliberative process appear in the law. Communications that are pre-decisional and reflect the give and take of the decision-making process are protected, the city solicitors say them. So maybe later we'll learn more about what happened in that afternoon in terms of decision-making about bringing in the National Guard, for instance, where to deploy police and all that. I just want to note at the bottom of, is this your story today, Luke? Luke,
yes.
Bravo? This. He has a timeline of the mayor's actions on the day of April 27th. The rock throwing broke out at Mondawmin at 3 p.m., right? 3 p.m., the mayor held a previously scheduled meeting at City Hall with school's CEO Gregory Thornton. At 4:30 p.m., she had a meeting with students about Freddie Gray at City Hall that was previously scheduled. Mm-hmm. Violence erupts at Penn and North, where the CVS is burned. So she's doing her thing as mayor, but
right.
I mean, we're assuming she's being apprised of the situation. We're assuming because is there a gap in emails that would fill that in for you?
According to her spokesman, although she kept those regularly scheduled meetings, people were coming and bringing her notes. She stepped out to make a call. And during that 4:30 meeting, she activates the Emergency Operations Center, and they go there at 5 o'clock.
So while she's with the students at 4:30, she does that. They go over to the Emergency Response Center. I think that's on Calvert Street. Right.
Actually, they go to police headquarters to discuss, and then they go to the Emergency Operations Center.
Okay. And when do we get the call to Governor? The Governor Hogan gets the call at 6:30 p.m.
Right.
To bring
in
the National Guard.
Now, and I bring this up because although this is all quick, things happen quickly. And there's an email the next day, one of the ones we got from a police commander where he says, "We all saw yesterday what 10 minutes of unchecked rioting can do. And so we need to be better deployed and better prepared." So they talk about how you need to respond very quickly to these things or else, 400 businesses get damaged.
Let's go to the phone lines and get some more comments from our listeners. Also, if you have questions for Ian Duncan or Luke Broadwater of The Sun about these emails and documents, please go right ahead, 410-662-8780. Michael, call back. I'm glad to see that. Michael, thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. You had called earlier, right?
Yeah, I got disconnected. Okay. I'm in the car currently, so I'm still out of service.
What did you want to say, Michael?
I guess my question is probably a two-part question. I'm a little confused. I'm a Baltimore teacher, and I teach right next to Mondawmin Mall. And the day of when everything broke out, there were flyers, and some of the kids had flyers with images of the Purge movie encouraging children to riot.
Right.
And it just blew my mind because these are professionally made flyers. How did my students have these flyers? Where did they come from? Who benefits from encouraging that behavior?
Yeah, so we know from the emails and from, you know, other sources that there was this Purge flyer circulating and that people were very concerned about, and that's how city officials really knew about what was going to happen. That said, I don't think we've ever tracked down the original source of that flyer. We don't know who started that, who created it, and I think that would be a really important thing to discover if we
yeah.
could.
I
just don't know how.
What do we know from these emails, if anything, about Gregory Thornton, the CEO of the school's decisions about holding students in class, keeping them from getting on buses, any of that? Do we learn anything more about that?
No. We do know that from the mayor's public comments that they're still not sure who gave the order to shut down the buses and the subway that day at Mondawmin. Many people believe that helped escalate tensions between the police and students, because we know from Thornton's public statements that hundreds of students were stranded without a ride home. So obviously, you know, many people say that doesn't give you the right to throw rocks at the police, but in retrospect, some people are questioning that decision.
And Ian, about the curfew, the mayor put a curfew in place on April 27th, I think, right? The night of the riot.
It started on April 28th.
Started the next day.
Yeah.
So that went a few days, and people started complaining about it pretty quickly. I think at first a lot of people just sort of understood, okay, that's one of the things you need to do to restore order. But by the time we get into the middle of the week there, some people are starting to write to City Hall to say, lift this curfew.
You do see slightly strange emails, I think, because I just wonder, like, who thinks, I know I'll email the mayor directly about this. Like, I'm going to pick my girlfriend up at the airport and her flight gets in at, like, midnight. Am I going to be okay? And
someone wrote to the mayor?
Yeah, there's stuff like that. Or, like, we're having our church concert at 10 o'clock. Could you please extend the curfew to 11 in Bolton Hill? And
it's Baltimore. This is Baltimore.
Yeah. But then, you know, but there is, like, you have this letter-writing campaign that the SCLU helped organize. I think they filed a legal challenge to whether the mayor even had the authority.
The American Civil Liberties Union.
Yeah.
And there were some people from out of town writing as well, right?
And so, you know, you do have these questions. You see these emails going back and forth on Tuesday morning. The mayor declared the curfew on Monday night, but there's these emails on Tuesday morning where they're still trying to figure out, like, well, what's the penalty for breaking this? Is it a misdemeanor? Like, can we hold people? Like, how do we arrest people? They're still fine-tuning the details. But then I think after the charges are announced against the six officers on Friday, that's when the pressure really, really begins to mount.
That was May 1st.
Yeah, of let's get rid of this curfew. I mean, the protest turned from being sort of menacing into jubilation, really.
The mayor wanted to end the curfew on Saturday? Is that what's revealed in the
emails?
That's
right. So we have emails back and forth between, it's Kirby Fowler, who's head of the downtown partnership, and Calliope Parthamos again, and he says, oh, well, I heard something that the mayor wanted to lift this and the governor said no, and Ms. Parthamos just writes back and says yes, the governor was adamantly against doing it.
So the curfew was not lifted until Sunday. May 3rd.
That's right.
So
yeah,
back to the phone lines. Thank you, Ian. Russell in Harford County, thank you for calling. Go right ahead. Hi.
Have a question, because there's been a lot of criticism, it seems, of the mayor for not jumping on the situation quicker. But if you don't allow the protesters to gather and actually start trouble before you call in the troops, so to say, aren't you sort of taking away their right to assemble? I mean, that seems to me to be a constitutional problem with that.
Right. I mean, you're making the mayor's point. Which is that she wanted to give respect people's First Amendment rights and let people protest. And it's worth remembering that for 2 weeks, the protests were entirely peaceful. I think the police union and others would argue that, yes, that's great, but once things got violent, we were put in formations, we were told to hold the line, and at that point, there wasn't a robust enough response to the property damage and the violence. That's a police tactic, and that's something that the police department has said, that it was done for officer safety because they were outnumbered in some of these situations. So they had to form this line.
You don't see the word stand down anywhere in the emails?
No.
Bob in Baltimore, with your comment or question, welcome.
Thank you, Dan. My question to you and the reporters is, has anybody done the Freedom of Information request on the MTA? Because from what I understand of this problem, there is an MTA culpability in the fact that the buses were not sent to the high school by Mondawmin when the decision was made by the principal to do early dismissal. I believe they did an early dismissal before 3 o'clock, and there were no buses there. So there was a problem that was seriously exacerbated by the fact that these kids came out, and there were no buses. And I don't understand that part of the story and why that's not being more fully vetted.
Okay. We'll go over that, Bob. And I'll just add here, Ruth in Charles Village wondering if there were rumors about a purge on Monday morning.
There were, right?
She says, from what I can see, there was little action taken by Dr. Thornton or other school administrators. So this was left to fester and build all day. Then there was poor decision-making regarding the shutting down of the buses. This left already keyed-up teenagers stuck with no way home. As soon as the purge rumors began, the city schools and MTA should have begun a plan to deal with that dismissal.
Okay. So I'll respond to Bob's question first, which is, we have filed Information Act requests with the MTA. Our colleague Kevin Rector did that. I do believe 75 students, according to the schools, left the high school about an hour or 45 minutes before dismissal. So, and I think they left by their own accord. They weren't allowed to leave. They just left the school. And those are the students that first began clashing with police. So I don't think it was in my understanding, it wasn't the principal gave them freedom to go do this. They did that on their own. I think there's certainly a fair amount of scrutiny to put on these decisions to shut down public transportation, and whether that was the right one in hindsight. I know that that's one of the things that the city's after action report is studying. Would it have been better or worse if this was happened? I think a lot of people think the situation could have been better.
Did we learn anything new about Dr. Thornton's role in this?
Not that I saw in the emails.
No,
Ian, did you see anything?
I mean, we have some stuff previously where he's, I think, trying to coordinate with the city, but I think just because of the way the bureaucracies are set up, we didn't see much from him.
There was a report, one of our reports, that he felt it was too late in the day to hold students in school.
And they were trying to stagger the bell times, I think, was one idea they had, so that you wouldn't have all the students being released at the same time, which then might have, you know, made it easier to kind of manage the flow of people around the city. And it seems like they just didn't have time to get that
right
together.
I think the MTA police request that of the schools, but they only requested about a half an hour before closing time or school lets out. And basically it was a logistic impossibility to all of a sudden institute new bell schedules in 30 minutes for dozens and dozens of schools. It was impossible.
Of another caller, Brian in Baltimore. Are you up there and ready to go?
Yes.
Hi, Brian.
Yes, Dan. How are you?
Okay.
Good. Listen, as I was watching all this unfold, and I forget the exact chronology, but I'm watching, you know, the writing begins and the looting begins, and one of the first places they hit was the CVS store, and my immediate reaction was, they're going after the drugs. And if I'm not mistaken, soon after that, there was another CVS store, and my concern was right away, well, now, this is some organized effort to steal drugs from drug stores. And is it related to all these murders that are going on in the city?
So that's definitely a theory that has been floated by some people in the police and on the city council. And we know that the DEA is trying to chase down people who looted drugs. We also know that they weren't the quickest at going and reviewing evidence that they might have had about that looting. Whether it was kind of a concerted thing and there was some gang or some big drug organization that was saying, okay, like, go out and steal all this stuff, we don't really know. I mean, these drug stores are like the biggest businesses in a lot of these neighborhoods, so you could say they're just an obvious target. But if anyone's charged, then maybe there will be some evidence that will come out that, hey, you know, they really were trying to target these places.
Luke, would you do me a favor here, in the time we have remaining, or just part of it anyway, how does what we learned this week from these emails compare with the portrayal of decision making and actions by the police commissioner and other brass, the characterization of that, description of that in the after review report made by the Fraternal Order of Police? Is there anything in the emails that would counter or support what they say in that?
So I think they have similar facts but different interpretations. So there is evidence about police giving protesters space and about holding the line and things like that, but there's not a diabolical plan to put police in harm's way.
To lead them to slaughter, and, to use the words of one officer quoted in the report.
And to allow businesses to be destroyed because it's only property. And the types of things that have been alleged, it's like people are reading the same facts and interpreting them totally differently based on their own ideology, it seems. There is some indication... sorry, I just lost my train of thought.
No,
go ahead.
I was going to say, some people interpreted the phrase "hold the line," which the former commissioner and others acknowledged using, to stand down.
Sure.
Remember that?
There is in the emails, this is what I was going to say, that they did prioritize, they categorized things in four priorities for the police, and the first was life and then property. So they did choose life over property, and they gave instructions to the police to protect life first.
And you see that in communiques?
Yeah, that's in an email. That's one of the emails that we got. And I think we even did our own little story on that email.
Here's a quick question from Lorenzo in Baltimore for our guests, Luke Broadwater and Ian Duncan. Go right ahead, Lorenzo.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. What's your question?
Good. So, I was wondering if any emails were able to determine if where this information came from about the BGF and the Bloods and the Crips. I don't remember which groups they were, but there was information that came out that they were supposedly trying to go after police officers, and what I heard later was that was misinformation. Is there any information that could tell us anything more about that stuff, where it came from, and whether it was valid or not?
Just for those who aren't familiar, that was an alert that went out from the police department on Monday. We had it here when we were on the air.
Yeah.
That gang members were targeting police.
So there's nothing specifically about that. I mean, I think that's really thoroughly been debunked by stuff that's come out in other releases through the Department of Homeland Security and other documents that we got from Baltimore County as well. There is a kind of thread going through about gang members being involved in these protesters, in these protests on Saturday, and people claiming to be gang members calling up like the Western District. So there are, there's the odd reference in there. So maybe that fed into why this alert went out on Monday, but who knows really. And there's certainly not anything saying like, hey, we're getting this information, this is why we need to put an alert out.
Interestingly, the police department has sort of defended that. We wrote a story, I think it was on the front page, about people being very critical about that misinformation being put out, and they basically said in this heightened time we felt the need to alert people even if we hadn't confirmed.
They felt it was credible. They used the word credible, correct?
Yeah, but it took what the DEA like a matter of hours to find their source and say this person's completely not credible.
Right.
So I think they rushed to judgment there.
Did we have that day? Did we know that it wasn't credible that day?
We didn't.
We got completely distracted by a riot that broke out.
Many suspected it wasn't. Yeah. I mean, and I think the next day, Jack Young, the city council president, held a press conference with gang members at City Hall and said that wasn't credible.
Right.
So
Luke, thank you for being here today. Luke Bradwater from The Sun and Ian Duncan from The Sun, thank you for your hard work this week and for being here to go over some of this for us. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to our first hour of Midday, another hour coming up. And I want to thank Terra Cafe, a new provider of lunch here on the Midday Show, located at 101 East 25th Street, over near 25th and St. Paul. Terra Cafe serves specialty wraps, fried fish, shrimp and grits, chicken and waffles, flame-grilled burgers, paninis, and more. More information on the web and on their Facebook page, Terra, T-E-R-R-A, Terra Cafe, be more.